All right, hello and good morning. How are you? Okay. So the last couple classes, we've been basically trying to address this goal, right? Taking processors, which are, we've been talking all semester, ultimately where we run all of our code. And sure, we can be efficient with how we write the code, have compiler emit the right and efficient optimized instructions. And then the hardware layer, the processors, we also want those to be fast as well. Right? And this is how we continually get better and better performance. We can write more complicated applications and still have them be performant. So our first idea, right, was pipelines. The intuition being that it's going to take the same amount of time to execute a single instruction, but rather than wait for that instruction to finish before we even start the next one, we actually start the next one while we're executing the previous instruction. And we talked about how to make that possible, right? Okay, and then we finished up last time on Tuesday, sort of looking at the next step, which is we have these cases where we have to wait, we have to solve. And if you're a processor designer, you're looking at your chip and you're saying, there's these times where just nothing's happening. Right, if we look at sort of this example, right, we have this move instruction here, but it has a memory access. Well, remember why we talked about caching for multiple classes? Right, what does caching do? Yeah. It speeds up memory. Why did we care about that? Because memory can be very slow. So if our cache doesn't work out, and we have to wait for memory, you look at the processor and you're like, it's not doing anything. And that's such a waste. Especially if we look at a later instruction and say, huh, what does R10 and R11 have to do with anything to do with this memory? Nothing, right? And so, hey, wouldn't it be nice if we could do some work while we were waiting here, run a different instruction in the meantime? Now, the trick though, right, we kind of mentioned a little bit, and we'll talk about that again, is that programmers don't want this. Right? Great for a processor. Hey, look, we can do some work in the meantime. However, from the programmer's point of view, they wrote this instruction after. Right? And we expect instructions to execute in order, and so we have to make sure that what's actually observable is in order. So of course there's going to be extra complexity. All right, we good with that so far? Does this sound familiar from where we left off from last time? I hope so. So what happens, right? We keep making things a little bit more complicated to extract a little bit more performance, and well, the hardware is going to reflect that. You know, we're not going to just sort of get this for free somehow. We're going to have a more complicated diagram for our general processor design. And we were kind of walking through this last time. Similar sort of start, we have, you know, instructions are stored in memory somewhere. We're definitely going to want good branch prediction in this model. So a way to sort of, whenever we encounter a jump or a branch, we want to make sure that we're going to guess, because we don't just want to wait till we know the answer. We're going to guess, we're going to speculate. And so we need some branch prediction mechanism to do that. And we'd like to get it right, because if we're wrong, then we do a bunch of work we didn't actually want to do, and we're going to have to fix all of that. Simple decodes, similar to what we've seen before. But a key new addition we're going to have is the rename and dispatch. We're going to talk about register renaming and go through examples of that. But that's going to help us keep track of exactly what we're trying to do for each instruction, even if we're executing them out of order. And when that finishes, they'll get forwarded to the instruction queue. And we also have to be thinking about, it's fine to execute out of order, but ultimately we need things to be in order for the programmer and what's observable. And so we're going to have this reorder buffer down here, which is an architectural element that will help make sure that we observe things in the order the programmer expected to. Instruction queue, as the name implies, is going to hold instructions that are sort of in flight that we're going to issue when we can. And we'll see what that means. Like, we can have instructions, but they might not be actually executable. Why? Well, we don't necessarily have the input data we need. Once they're issued, they can start executing. We're going to have to help enable this, because with more things in flight at once, we need a way to keep track of that. That's going to be part of the renaming, and then we're also going to need more registers to store all of that in flight state. We can also, once we have a lot of this mechanisms, you know, we can do things like have more than one ALU. So if we have a way to keep track of instructions, make sure they finish in order, and we know that they're using different data, well, we can execute them at the same time in different ALUs, alongside access system memory. And we'll talk about, we kind of have this example here, right, where the ALU is shown with two stages. We'll talk about that. We have write back like before to sort of update the results. And we'll talk about the physical registers. And then finally, at the end, the commit stage, or the retire stage, we have to add. Because we need something that's, again, going to make sure that what the programmer intended is what the processor is ultimately doing. So this will finalize the instruction and figure out when we can reuse those registers. So we need state to store values while instructions are in flight, but eventually the instructions will finish and there's nothing that's going to use that data again. We can then reuse that register. And as I've sort of mentioned, we also need to handle what happens if we were incorrect with our branch prediction. Because if we predict incorrectly, we've essentially speculatively executed instructions, which the program, right, if you read the code and thought through what the code should do, should not have executed. We do that, so just in case we were right, we're sort of ahead of the game. But if we're wrong, we certainly don't want those instructions to show up. Right, we don't want those results to be observable because, again, as a programmer, you'd be like, what's happening? Why is this extra loop running that shouldn't be? So processors to make sure to hide that as well. Of course, there's other events, right, that can happen during a processor's execution that we've talked about, you know, much earlier in the semester, similar kind of issues. Right? We can be running instructions that we then find out later, like, oh, actually we shouldn't have. So not only do we have to clean it up, but this is also a little bit of a teaser for what we're gonna get into in the next couple classes, where there's actually some interesting outcomes when you do this. When you do this idea of running instructions speculatively that you actually shouldn't have. That can be problematic, but we'll get there. All right. Any questions on sort of this diagram? Again, we'll go into some of the new pieces in a bit more detail, but anything right now? Cool, okay. So if we look at sort of this diagram like we've been seeing, we can see these stages are a little bit different than what we've had for the five-stage pipeline. Some of these are going to be familiar, right? Fetch, for example, right? Have to retrieve the instruction. With the notion that we can execute out of order, though, it's going to make sense for us to have sort of multiple instructions that we can choose from. And so we might actually fetch several instructions. A major decision we have to make is which instructions can we actually issue? Meaning, sort of send to the execute stage. Now, this is going to require two things. So we need something, an execution unit. So we need the actual hardware resource, the ALU or access to memory to be ready, right? So it's not doing something else. And we need the operands or the inputs to exist. Right, so if it depends on the outcome of the earlier instruction, well, we have to make sure that instruction has a chance to compute, right, and then we can issue the follow-on instruction. And then finally, the commit stage, which handles this issue, right? So if we look at these two instructions, so if we predict this branch correctly, we executed some more instructions, right, and then what do we notice here? Right, we actually sort of finished a later instruction first, which is okay, but we need to sort of hide that and make sure that the commit stage is in order, right? So that there's actually so at least happen the same time in order. So similar to what we've seen, just adding the new stages to make this work. Yeah?
What's the R? Is that read?
What's the R? What is the R?
Rename.
Oh, rename, right, okay. Right, that's what we're gonna talk about. Good question. Yeah?
Well, what does committing actually entail? Like, what does it do?
What does committing actually entail? So it would let, something that's observable in memory, have to make sure that the anything that's handled out of order is eventually fixed up in order.
So the memory is just part of commit now.
Is memory? Well, reading from memory is going to happen earlier.
I'll say we are going to gloss over exactly how synchronizing memory between multiple out-of-order processors works, because it is probably the most complicated topic in modern computer architecture.
Yeah.
I think as far as things updated by the commit stage, the big thing is that until we commit, we have to keep information around in case, like, an early instruction seg fault. And in that case, we better undo all the later instructions.
Right.
And the commit is getting rid of that extra information.
Right, so making sure that there's nothing observable about instructions that we speculated, and before we realize, like, oh, actually, that was a seg fault. That memory shouldn't have been accessed, and everything that's happened after that should not be observable. Yeah.
So is commit the only instruction that like has to
go in order, or the only part that has to go in order, or do you fetch, decode, and redeem also have to go in order?
Well, just so make sure, you know, when we say commit, that's a stage, right? So
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We're executing the instructions. This is the critical piece, right? This is it's observable. We're going to ultimately end up just fetching in order, because we have some flexibility, but ultimately, because we eventually have to commit in order, it's going to make sense that we want to start with early instructions, and so fetching in order makes sense. And then things are going to proceed through the pipeline, right? Because this is implemented in hardware, and so we're only going to have connections between specific stages. And so that's why we generally see things in order. We're just going to try to be opportunistic when we can. Yeah?
Are we decoding two instructions on the same cycle, like with the first and second instruction?
That's right. So when we have these, so anything like here, right, that means that, yes, we have the hardware capability to do those two things in the same cycle. Yeah.
I'm kind of confused why all of a sudden we have that capability versus like before we didn't have that. Like we could only do one. Like what happened?
So like wait a minute, what happened? Like why do we suddenly now have this ability to do sort of two dispatch on the same cycle? Again, it's sort of this push towards performance. And so if we can do more at the same time, that's gonna increase performance, but it adds complexity. Right, because we have to be able to keep track of that. There's diminishing returns if we have to do everything in order. But now that we're going to have the ability to execute some things out of order, having more things ready is going to be more important. Right? Because if we only knew about one thing, like one instruction, that's kind of all we would be able to execute. And so by increasing our hardware and being able to do multiple things in the same cycle, that's going to allow our processor to have more ready that it can choose from to execute out of order. So it kind of, it's not sort of strictly required, because we could have a long stall from memory and we get kind of the same effect. But while we're here, this is just gonna sort of help us have more instructions we could potentially run. All right, okay. So, with this general flow, right? We talked about this a little bit last time, but there is kind of this challenge that's emerging, right? So if we look at three instructions in particular, I'm gonna highlight these three ads. Right, what do we notice? R5 is an output, R5 is an output, and here it's an input, right? Well, it's an input in the earlier ones too, but for sake of my argument, what do we care that R5 is going to be updated, and then it's going to be used here. Now, in this example, right, so you know, here, right, in this case, this wasn't really an issue, but we can imagine that in general, which R5 do we use as the input? Right, this add instruction, does it, we don't want to get confused. We know that we need this. We don't want to get confused by this one. So to help with that, that's where the renaming is going to come to help us. So we have this rename stage here. And our goal is to map from the architectural registers. This is what something like x86 promises are going to exist. Programmers, compilers expect to be able to use them. But that's an abstraction. That's what we're telling programmers. Inside the chip, right, we can do what we want. We have more flexibility, and so we can have our own notion of physical registers. And we can have a lot more physical registers than what we promised architecturally, because now it's an implementation decision for what the processor wants to do. All right, so what's this going to look like? So we're going to need to be able to do a mapping between what the program expects and what the processor actually has internally. And the key here is that we're going to have a lot more physical registers that we can use. So when we have multiple instructions in flight, we have unique places to put data that we need to keep around. Now, to make this more systematic and generalizable, we're going to use this renaming process so that it's much easier to track which data we need for any given instruction. So we don't have that confusion about like, oh, we need R5. Well, which R5? So as you can see on the left here, we have a mapping table, right? We have the architectural register that the programmer expects to have, and then we have our internal physical register. And we're going to maintain a mapping. We're also going to maintain a free list. Right, these are physical registers that are not currently being used. For the in-flight instructions, they're unused, and we can use them for renaming. Okay. So if we have our instructions here, right, we have these three add instructions. As you can see, they're all writing to R8 and then using R8 as an input. This is confusing. Because if we want to run these potentially out of order, we need to know, like, make sure that we're getting the correct result, right? So that this third instruction uses the output of the instruction just before it. So we'll do a renaming process. Now, our idea here is that we're going to look up. So these are the architectural, right, from the actual instructions. We're going to look that up so we can see R10 and R8. These have a mapping, right? So we'll be able to pull out the physical register names. So that's going to be the input. So we'll have R10 maps to X19, R8, X13. So those are our inputs, right? But we need somewhere to, like, where's the addition going to go? We're going to want to have a new register for that so we can keep it separate. Well, we need something new, right? So we're going to look at our free list here, take our what's available. Now what? So the last piece here is we've now renamed our input and output registers for this instruction. What do we have to do with register 18, X18?
Put it in the map.
Yeah, right, we have to update our map. Right, so our output was R8, and so we're not gonna have this. Right, we have to update that so that now our next register knows that it needs to use that physical register as the input for the next instruction. All right, so cleaned up a little bit. Good so far? Yeah.
Does X13 get re-added to the free register list after it's been, like, X out or whatever you want to say? Like, after it's written?
Right, so it's no longer mapped to R8. Because now this instruction is writing to R8, so, but is it free? And so it's not going to be free yet, right? We're going to have to keep that because we might have to undo it, right? There's all sorts of things that could happen. And so until we get to that commit stage and we know for a fact that there's nothing that's going to depend on that, we can't just free it. We're just going to look at the renaming, but. All right, so if we do the next instruction, right, we're gonna have a similar workflow, right? We're gonna look up R11 and R8. We have R11 and R8. We've got the physical addresses here. We're gonna have to pull a new free register to use as the output and then update. That's gonna be here. and it's going to be our output looking something like this. And for the third register, or sorry, third register, third instruction, I should say, right, we're going to repeat the process. Look for our inputs in our existing map. Output is going to have to be a new register. And then we have to update our mapping now because what the instruction expects to be R8 is actually going to be stored in X21. Questions? So we haven't changed anything, but now we have a much clearer picture of what we're actually trying to do. Because now these instructions are much more independent in the sense that we know exactly which register is going to hold the data to make that instruction correct. And this is going to sort of greatly simplify this ability to run multiple things at the same time or out of order and be sure that we're using the correct data. Now, these are all sort of just, these are just add instructions. We can, expand this. It doesn't have to just be add. So if we look at an example with some moves and loads and stores, right, we can do the same type of register renaming process. So our add's gonna proceed like we've seen. We look up in our map, use those inputs, use a new free register for the output, and then update our map. What's the move remap going to look like? So we still have our instruction. Now we're trying to store this, right? So what are we storing? Well, okay, R8, we can do the remap here. Look that up. So that's still, right, same process there. Now our address is going to be here, but we still want to do the renaming. But because this is a store, right, we're not going to write something to another register, so we're not going to pull something off the free list. It's just sort of for consistency, we can say, okay, that the output is going to be to memory. So again, same idea. We need to map everything into the physical register, so we do that here. And now it's very clear what our inputs are going to be. So the goal of this, right, is to track these dependencies and interactions between instructions. But if we look at this carefully, we notice there's another potential interaction here. And so what is that? Well, look at these two moves. So these are both going to be memory accesses, right? First one's a store, second one's a load. Now, the addresses are not from the same register, but that doesn't really matter, right? What matters to memory is what the actual address is. And so what if this address plus this address and then the other later address end up to be the same. Well, from a programmer's point of view, if I have a store first and then I end up reading from that same memory address, I better get the value that I stored. So we have to be very careful that we're not executing the load first, loading an old value, and then sort of not realizing that these were actually reading and writing from the same memory address, potentially. So there's a potential hazard here. Now, we don't know for sure, but the processor has to be aware of this, but register renaming is not going to help here. We need something else in the processor. So maybe we sort of just guarantee that all loads and stores are going to issue in the order that they were originally in the program, regardless of what else is reordered. Or have explicit checks when during the execution to say, okay, wait a minute, now that we know what these addresses are they actually the same? And so now I'm going to make sure that the value that I stored is actually the one that I'm going to use for the load. Does that make sense? Just want to make sure that we're not sort of glossing over this detail, because this is important if the processor is going to be correct. Good. All right, so let's continue the renaming. So we can do the same for the subtract instruction, right? Pulling off a new free register for the output. Now for the move where we're doing the load, now we do have an output, right? We're gonna store it in a register here. And so there we will have to pull a new register from the free list. X21 for our output. For setting a constant into a register, now we don't have an input, so we won't rename any of the inputs. We just have this constant. However, we still have an output, and so we're going to need a new physical register for that. And then finally, our add we'll rename as before. All right. So far, so good? Should we see if we can do it? How about we practice? All right. It'll take a couple minutes. Can we rename these instructions? Rename registers for these instructions. Give me maybe 3-4 minutes. Of course, feel free to consult your neighbors.
was it now?
Interesting stuff right there. It's not that.
All right, let's see if we can do this. Okay, so we have our add instruction. What are the renamed inputs? First input? Anyone? Yeah?
X13.
X13, right, okay, so R8, right, we looked that up. Yep, X13. Other input? Yep. 17, yep. And what's gonna be our output? Yeah, X18, why? Because that's our first free. And what's our last step here? Yeah.
Make R9, X18.
That's right, so no longer free, but now our output was R9, so we have to rename that and update our mapping. Okay, great. Our move, we're still gonna have the 100. What do we do here? We need an output, right? So we're gonna have we have to keep track of that, right? So this X20, now R10, we've now mapped that, right? All right, what's our subtract R10? So we can look that up. We have X20 and R8, we can look that up. Need an output, right? This is no longer free, so we'll have this one here. Now we had, our output was R8, right? So we need to make sure that we update that. So far, so good? All right, finish this off here, XOR. So R8, we look it up, was 21, R9, we look it up, is 18, take a new output, that's no longer free. Take our next free available physical register, 23, and then don't forget that we need to now update our output. And we have and Q, REX is X4, R9 we can look up is 23, our output is 24, that's no longer free, but we need to update our mapping from R9. Right. Okay, and we've renamed. Any questions? So we're not showing all of the x86 architectural registers, but they'll be renamed the same way. Yep.
If you like fetch two instructions that modify the same register at the same time, potentially like rename out of order.
So if we look at, we actually have kind of an example here, right? We have these two instructions, right? They both modify R9. And so when we do this renaming, right, we have to be careful that we are renaming it in order so that what we put here, right, becomes the input of the next instruction. And so when we're executing out of order, our goal ultimately is to do the actual like computation, so the actual add, and have flexibility there. But there's certainly things we are going to have to do in order. Like we're going to have to rename these in order. Right, because we don't want to get this backwards. So even if we are fetching multiple instructions in the same cycle, that's okay. We just have to make sure that the renaming process is doing this in a way that's consistent. Yeah?
So is the reason in the move queue instruction that we don't kind of look up the R10 register prior to renaming it, that is because we're moving value 100 just directly into our like new renamed register?
Right, so if you look at this move instruction, like is the reason that we're not sort of renaming an input, right, because we're just sort of unconditionally setting the output, the register to that constant, right? So whatever's there before, don't care, right? We don't have to consider it. It doesn't impact the ability to execute that instruction. Simply just going to put that value in the register. All right, good? Okay. So you might be thinking, okay, I get the register rename thing. Like I can see that we're doing this mapping and we have a table. All right, that seems fine. But like, what do we do with this? How does this actually let us run things out of order? Well, to answer that, we need to go a little bit further here. So we now have renamed instructions in our instruction queue. The processor is going to try to execute those, so it's always staying busy. So it's always doing work. But again, it has to compute the correct result. So it can't just run an instruction arbitrarily. It needs to make sure, importantly, that the data, the input, the values of the operands are known. So how do we do that? So now we're going to need another data structure that's going to tell us for all of our physical registers, is the value there ready or not? So we have our instructions. This is our instruction queue, right? As you can see, they're renamed. So that's the output from our previous stage. But if we look at the actual registers, the physical register file, we notice that like 6, 7, 8, 9, right, they're marked as pending. Because we don't know what the value is yet. Why? Well, we haven't run the instruction and done the computation that will tell us. So because we've done this renaming, then we now have the flexibility to run these instructions out of order. So for example, right, just kind of picking one, sort of, if we just wanted to kind of do something at, you know, kind of at random, right? Let's say we just looked at instruction 6. Well, because we have unique inputs and outputs for the registers because of the renaming, we could do that, but we would look this and we'd say, okay, X1, oh, great, that's ready. So, okay, wonderful. But X8, right, that's not. So we don't know what X8 is going to be, so we can't run instruction 6 right now. Which kind of makes sense, right? We kind of expect the instructions are going to have dependencies in order. So instead, we're going to look at the beginning. Let's look at our first add instruction. Look at its inputs, 1 and 5. Now when we map those over here, what do we see? Well, they are ready. And so this instruction we can actually issue, and so we're gonna do that. And we're gonna do that by mapping it to a particular execution unit. So in our first cycle here, we're going to take instruction 1 and we're going to assign it to ALU1. Right? That's what's happening right here. We can do that because our inputs are ready. So we have the data. We can say use X1, use X5, execute on this ALU. Now what's going to happen after cycle 1 finishes? Well, we know what an add instruction should do, and we have the register rename here. And so when this add instruction finishes, when it executes, after it's finished executing, we now know what the outcome of the addition was. And so we also then know that X6, we can mark that no longer pending, but now it's going to be ready. After that cycle has happened and that execution has happened in the ALU. In the meantime, we can look at the next add instruction. 2 was ready, but 6 is still waiting for the previous instruction. Right, so that was not ready. And so even though we had the second ALU, right, we couldn't issue that instruction there because our second operand, X6, wasn't available. However, when this add does finish, we will mark that as ready. ALU2, nothing, was just went unused. But now when we look at instruction 2, we look at 2 and 6. 2 and 6 are both ready. And so we're going to go ahead and assign instruction 2 to our ALU. And then after that finishes, then register 7 here will be marked as ready because we've computed the result. And so with this, so now we have the pieces, right? We've renamed the registers. We have knowledge of which values are ready, which registers actually contain correct data. And now the processor has the information it needs to be able to make these decisions. And so if it finds a later instruction that's ready, and there's resources to execute it, now it can do it. And it won't get confused about what the correct inputs and outputs are supposed to be because of the renaming. And we know what's actually available because we're tracking which registers have data ready. So let's continue with our example here, right? If we look at instruction 3, we can issue that now because 3 and 7 are marked ready. We assign that to the ALU1. When that finishes, the output will be ready as well. And so we get to sort of this point here, right? We've executed the first 3 instructions. But what do we notice at this point? So if we look at 4 and 8, 4 is ready, 8's ready, right? What about 1 and 8? Ready? Ready. So we got 2 instructions that need ALUs. We've got 2 ALUs. Their operands are ready. We can go ahead and execute those. And so even though, right, this earlier instruction 5, it wasn't ready, right? We haven't computed 9 yet. That's okay, right? Because we can figure out that we can run 4 and 6. We have the results ready. You know what to do, we can execute those. And then we'll continue from there. Once those finish executing, mark new things ready, that frees up or sort of enables other instructions to be able to execute. All right, so now we can run the jump and the add. Our next instruction, the add here, is now, we can now execute it because 3 and 11 are ready. So we can do that. We don't have another instruction that's ready to run on the other ALU. And then finally, the compare that we're showing here is now ready, and will execute as well. Yeah.
Is this table maintained by the hardware like in parallel, or are there extra clock cycles that it's doing bookkeeping?
So is this table, how is this table maintained in the hardware? Is it maintained along sort of in at the same time that we're executing, you know, the instructions, or is this sort of like another stage, right? Do we have to sort of wait for another clock cycle to update this? And this is absolutely something we can execute alongside everything else, right? And so when we compute the output and actually store it to the register file is going to mark that as it's ready, right? And so the hardware is going to do that at the same time. Yeah?
If the jump makes us go back up to, let's just say, the first instruction, then would the value, like, we computed the compare and then the add that's after the jump, would that kind of mess up any of our renaming because we rename something that comes after the jump from before, or not actually?
Yeah, so question is, okay, we had this jump here in the middle, and we predicted it, and that's how we decided that we are going to run those add instructions. Right here, we're just showing, like, we assume that we did that prediction correctly, and so by the time we figure out that jump, we're like, okay, yes, those are the instructions that we were supposed to run. Now, if we had been wrong, right, if we had mispredicted that, we are going to have to sort of undo these results in this, but we've sort of only stored them in these physical registers, right, in this example, and so that's okay. We have enough state, we can undo that, and then we'll go and then fetch the correct instructions and continue the renaming process from that. So we have enough information to do it correctly. Of course, performance-wise, it's a disappointment because we thought we were doing, you know, a good thing by running the instructions. It turns out we weren't, but at least it'll be correct. All right, other questions? I think we have one more slide here just.
So, like, after you get to the commit stage, would you kind of like free the intermediate registers?
Right. So we've renamed these registers. We've marked them as ready. Eventually, we want to be able to reuse them. Right? They're going to be free again in the future, so we can use them for new instructions. Yes. Once we get to the commit and we're sure that, like, we were supposed to execute this instruction, it's in order. Everything that came before it is finished. And then once we know for sure that there's nothing left that's ever going to need that value from that register, that's when we can free it and sort of mark it back as pending and then let a new renaming reuse it. All right, let's try it. So we have a few instructions. They've been renamed. This should say assume one cycle per axis. Let's take a couple minutes. Map sort of what's the processor going to do here. So it's going to, for each cycle, it's going to run it can run something on the ALU, or it can use memory. What's this going to look like?
Only one ALU.
There's only one ALU. Alright, so what's going to happen with this processor design and this set of instructions? So if we look at our first instruction, this move, are we going to be able to execute that? Should we issue it? Takers for yes? Takers for no? Alright, we got yeses. Lead the way. Why? Why was the answer yes?
Because before is ready.
Right, because our one input here, which is 04, where it uses the address, that's ready. Okay. Where do we put this? Where do we issue this to? What's our execution unit? ALU? Data cache, right. So this is a memory access. So in cycle one, we're going to put instruction one here. Okay, so then we look at our next instruction, you know, which is also a move, right? Similar. Okay, so it's another memory access. Well, we're already using our access to our data cache. That execution unit is occupied. All right, so there's nothing we can do. Move on to cycle two. Yeah.
Everything for instruction three is ready.
Right. So instruction two was ready, but if we look down here at instruction three, what are its inputs, one and two? Well, one's ready, two's ready. So that means that the processor can issue that instruction. We have the ALU, it's not being used. So we're gonna put instruction 3 there. Now what about, so at this point, right, where our execution units are in use, right, so we're not going to be able to issue additional instructions, but when the cycle finishes, what's going to happen? So instruction 1 is going to mark R6 is ready, instruction 3 is going to mark R8 is ready, or sorry, X8. What happens in cycle 2? Yeah.
2 and 4.
Yeah, okay, so we got 2 here. So 5 was ready, right? But we didn't have anywhere to execute it. But now we do. And 4, because now we're waiting on 1 and 6, but those are both ready. So we'll be able to execute that here. After that finishes executing, we now have 7 is ready as well as 9. And so with 1 and 7, here we can execute instruction 5. Is that what you got? Any questions? Yeah.
Just to confirm, if 4 had like not been ready, you could have just done 5 instead if it was ready. Like,
in cycle 2?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. So in cycle 2, if this 4, like if say this 6 wasn't ready, but 7 was, then yes, we could issue 5 instead. Okay. Right. So we're gonna do sort of the earliest instructions that we have. Resources, execution units, and the inputs are ready. Yeah?
Does this like ever kind of clog up with too many kind of instructions waiting for like registers to be ready?
Right. So does this ever clog up where there's too many instructions that are sort of just waiting. Like they're in the instruction queue, but we can't issue them yet. So yes, in certain cases, especially like imagine we have a lot of cache misses and everything depends on accessing that memory. We might have a lot of computation we want to do with that memory that we just can't execute yet because we don't have the data back. And that's really the entire point of this, right? Is that that's going to happen. And so we want at least, if possible, right, something we can do in the meantime. But it's not always going to be possible, right? We won't always have an instruction where the inputs are ready. And so this instruction queue is not infinite, of course, right? Our hardware is not going to allow us to take all the instructions. So at some point, if this fills up, we will stop, right? There'll be back pressure. We won't be able to rename and more instructions because we have nowhere to store the rename instruction. Okay. All right, so now we've seen the rename, what we can do for issuing, so we know what we can execute. The other part that we mentioned at the beginning of looking at this diagram are these ALU units. And so we have some ALU that units are sort of single stage, execute a single clock instruction. Things like an add, right? Very simple. Other operations might be more complicated, and rather than delaying everything, just like we said with the pipeline, we can slice things into finer pieces. So we can have ALU that's divided up and has actually multiple stages. So we say ALU 3 here is actually part 1 and 2. And so we can have pipelines inside of our pipelines, right? We can have an ALU that's pipelined with multiple stages, and it has the same benefits as pipelining in general. So rather than sort of blocking that entire resource for the entire duration of the operation, now we can have a new operation starting every cycle, and so it's still going to take 3 cycles for that one operation to finish, But in terms of throughput, we're getting a new answer every cycle, right? Because we're finishing the next operation on the next cycle. But keep in mind, right, we have to think about the data. So how long will it take on a three-stage ALU that can do multiplication to execute this equation, right, this series of multiplies? Any thoughts? Any guesses on how long this will take? Yeah?
Six cycles.
Six cycles, okay. And how did you get to six? Ah, okay. So this one, so wait, so the inner one here, take the three.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we can run B, and then we can run, or then we, okay. Yeah, thoughts?
I guess since there's three kind of multiplications that we're trying to do, there's three cycle latency, then kind
of. Right, so sort of in like the simplest case, right, if we're doing three separate multiplies and each one takes three cycles, take sort of nine. And so the question basically is like, yeah, will we be able to exploit this pipeline? And because of this second multiplication needs the answer from the first multiplication, we won't be able to start it until we finish this one. And we won't be able to start this one until we finish the previous. And so we're going to end up with nine, needing nine cycles because we can't forward inside of our ALU. Now, if you compare that to something like this, we wanted to do these two separate multiplications, right? It's going to take the full three cycles to do the first one, but then the second one we could pipeline, right? And so we'll just take one additional cycle to finish that. Other ALU elements may not be pipelined, right? Might just be single stage, but might still take multiple cycles. And they basically will have a way to signal. So like something like a divide where there's not a great way to organize the hardware to do it in multiple stages, just one sort of execution block here. And then we, you know, we'll put the inputs in, we'll get the answer, but then we get a signal that tells us when this finishes. And so the processor might just have to wait until that ALU actually completes. All right. So we can see what mapping. So we've seen these instructions, right? We've seen our scoreboard already. With these more ALUs and multi-stage ALUs, things are going to be a little bit more complicated, but they really just follow the same pattern. So for example, if we look at our first two instructions here, add and multiply. Well, add one and two, those are both ready. So we're going to go ahead and schedule that on the first ALU. The multiply needs the ALU three, which is two stage. Four and five are both ready. So we can go ahead and schedule that. But after that first cycle, our first add finished executing, so we can mark three as ready. However, right, six is still going to be pending. Why? Because it needed to run that second stage. And so it took more than one cycle to get the result. So that means six is not ready, but we can still find other instructions. So here we have this multiply and this add. Three and seven are now ready, so we can run the multiply on the ALU three. the add is now ready because of register 3, so we can run that on the first ALU. And so this follows just like we saw before, except now we're not going to get all of the answers after a single cycle. The ALU 3 ones will take an additional cycle. And so the output here, right, this 8 is still going to be pending. But this multiply here, which needs 4 and 6, 6 is ready, 4 is ready. And even though we are executing in stage 2, stage 1 is available. And so we'll be able to put multiply 7 there. This compare, however, can't, because we don't have it yet. Right. So even though we started it, we haven't gotten the answer, and so that's still pending. So we will not be able to issue that compare until the next cycle, when this instruction is now finished, and so we can issue instruction 4. We can do another multiply now that the stage 1 is available. And so it continues just like we've seen, except we have this additional stage in the ALU. We can issue the next multiply, we issued the next multiply because the ALU 3 was free. When 9 finishes, then we can do the jump, and so on. Okay. All right, any questions about this example? All right. So just a couple of things to kind of clean up here. So we've talked about register renaming, right? Our examples, we've had sort of explicit registers. Some certain instructions might actually use more than are just listed there. That's okay. We're still going to do the same process, except the processor may actually take one instruction and internally make it 2, right, that are actually a little bit easier to execute, and then do the renaming on those. Right, and then similar from here, we've sort of been showing the condition codes, but those are also going to be need to be computed and then be part of the renaming. We talked about this a little bit at the beginning, there was a question kind of about this, about like, well, what happens if things just keep piling up? Well, that can happen, right? There may not always be something available. Modern processors try the best they can to have a lot of instructions in flight, but that requires a lot of registers and adds complexity. It also means that if you do mispredict, right, there's going to be a pretty big cost there. And just as an example of what we can do for kind of helping, right, so we can look at these two loops. And what's interesting is that because the processor can execute things out of order, even though we have a third more instructions on the right-hand loop, it doesn't affect the performance. Right, so a lot more instructions, but because the resources are there and the processor can be strategic, it doesn't actually affect anything. All right, so those are the principal mechanisms for out of order. We're going to move, I kind of alluded to this a little bit, of talking about some of the downsides of more complex processor designs like this. All right, see you next week.